Pay attention. This time I don't have a specific location in mind, just a specific material. I need you to gather pure water elemental cores. Summon elementals if you have the skills. Gather them from the ley line directly if you don't. Other methods do exist. Come see me after this if you want to attempt an extra credit assignment. Dismissed. Ro Onaran is a honey slime. She has a cute round face and a mass of honey blonde curls you'd have to inspect very closely to identify as just another part of her golden gooey flesh. Seductive, playful, and a mistress of alchemy. She is especially adept at locating and gathering magical materials to synthesize into others. She has recently joined the faculty of Athene Magical College as an instructor in arts once forbidden in this part of the world. Her form is variable within a certain range, amber-colored and squishy with an exterior membrane, very different from other gelatinous amorphous creatures. She mostly keeps that form small and tight. Her tits are large today, large enough to show off considerable cleavage. Her tight white dress shirt is struggling to contain the overspilling boob. Its task is made more difficult with two buttons undone. They weren't this big last time you saw her, but she can change that as easily as someone might style their hair another way. Maybe she has a date. You ask her for an extra credit assignment, confident in your skills. There is a hill past the Darkling Wood. Don't get turned around. It sits on the ocean's edge, but you must take the perilous path through that place by night. Take this. After a moment's visible concentration, during which her eyes glaze over, the amber-hued woman extends a palm. You don't see anything move within her, but her palm spreads and a blue-colored rock escapes from her gel with an organic-sounding schlorp. You take it, hesitantly. It deforms under your fingers like moldable putty or clay, but returns quickly to its former shape. The currency of my people, and also a mark of friendship. If you carry it, you will be able to reach the hill and enter. I will speak no more. You will be able to find the correct materials if you are smart. Maybe you'll even learn something if you are also wise. Go and good luck. Her cheerful send-off appears to be all she has for you, because the instructor turns abruptly to speak to another student. And you leave for the dark-lit wood immediately, stone in hand. If you go now, you'll get there just as the sun goes down.
At the edge of the Moonless Valley is a stream which runs to the sea. It is there where you stop to fill your canteen with water. The water in the temple is not to be drunk, as Professor Onaran made clear, and you might need to spend the night. The malleable rock in your pocket has made a nice worry stone throughout this adventure. You touch it once more for luck, and then continue on the path, your water jug full. The stream runs easily to the sea, next to a white sand pathway. A large hill, almost a mountain, sits in the near distance, right at the edge of the water. In fact, this stream runs up the mount and over, spilling into many waterfalls on the other side, presumably fed by underground sources. The river seems to change color the closer you get to the hill, becoming a deeper, darker blue. You look down into it. A mound of bluish material rises, showing a happy, smiling face in the river. A manifested elemental slime, like the type from your conjuring courses. They shouldn't exist without a summoner. You extend your hand and touch the air above it, prodding at connections and magical ley lines. You reach a tendril of your own power and surveil the slime. You find no tether at the other end. The environment itself is its power source, allowing it to stay here peaceably without needing additional sustenance. Intriguing. You extend your hand closer. Water aspected mana, the professor told you to store it up. It pours from you toward the slime. The happy little thing slurps it up, extruding a few bright blue gems onto the shore for you to stow in your pack. Pure water cores, exactly what the professor was looking for. It licks your hand, a slightly sticky sensation. The slime has leaned up and done this suddenly. Then it recedes into the river. You thought it got stronger and split into waterfalls, that river. and poured into the sea in such volume you thought it was natural water, but as you get nearer and see on the other side, see what's pouring down the other side of the mountain and cavorting at the shore of the sea. Green slimes in the roots of bushes, white slimes sticking to trees, a doppelganger wearing your own appearance, moonbathing far off the path with benign, friendly intent, waving. You realize the river might be entirely made up of shape-shifting elementals, given anchor and form by some vast magical source near here. All of them are willing to barter your very high level of excess water mana, their preferred medium, for gems and materials of pure water elemental energy. And so, already, this is a cheaper and more accessible way of getting these materials than almost any other you might imagine. The journey winds on. Your sack increasingly full of core stones, and you enjoy the friendly slime creatures peacefully cohabiting with local wild and plant life. You're actually about to turn back before you even make it to the mountain, until something catches your eye, nestled halfway up the cliff, an edifice of stone with a long, winding stairway up to it, white, massive, rounded on top with a beautiful dome. A library? A temple? It has that blocky, many-columned appearance. You've got to find out. It takes a while, your limbs tired from carrying the bag, but you come wearily to the stairs up to the door, a door that is wide open. It must be incredibly heavy. You can't imagine who opened it. Crackling with energy, a field in front of the door is proof against all forms of intrusion or dirtying. You have nothing unclean or dangerous, and so you pass through it with nothing more than a brief static spark across your skin. You decide it was a temple before you entered. Too many statues of beatific figures with halos and vast carved wings for it to be a library. But it must be abandoned. Once you enter, you reconsider. There are seats, but they're not uncomfortable pews. Instead, they are sunken conversation pits with padded circular seats, distributed throughout the room. Each of these is half filled with what you recognize as the water elemental medium flowing in the stream outside. And the other half is dry seating. Clearly a mixed crowd of elementals and mortals once used this facility, and sat in discussion or shared worship or something unusual and interesting. And expensive. The sconces on the walls are gold. This temple was wide open, but nobody ever stole anything. They're engraved with shining runes and inlaid with not just water elemental stones and signs, but all the others as well. The other thing you reconsider is whether this place is truly abandoned. Because it's immaculate. There's not even dust. No cobwebs. The seats are patched in places. They've clearly been upkept. And they beckon you with a plush promise to your weary bones. You see one nearby, half of the seating covered in what seems to be a loosely folded pile of blankets. You consider you might get a nap laying across the bench at the other end of it, before going home. This place is under a spell of peace and calm. Only positive energy can flow here. You experimentally try to form hostile intent, as you so often have when casting spells, but you feel it drain away, magically suctioned out, leaving peace and calm. One of the hallmarks of old magic is how seamless it is. Casual mental control and compulsion, but nothing you really feel put out by. It's just kind of a fair deal that you can't fight here, but nobody else could fight you either. You'd hate to see one of those grand statues or carved metal altars get damaged anyway. The seats are every bit as soft as they appear. You stretch out. So nice to settle your weary bones. You look across at the pile of blankets and consider pulling one over you. Until a long, slender limb emerges from the pile. Then another. And then an immaculate feminine face pokes out. Opens its eyes. Smiles. There's a whoosh as the blanket billows outward, forming a pair of wings that appear at once impossibly wide and compact enough to remain in the conversation pit with the two of you. Her dainty arms raise over her head in a protracted stretch. She's wearing a dark blue slip dress and nothing else. Her light hair falls just above her collarbone. During the stretch, her breasts bounce with impossible plush pliability, and you do nothing to hide your interest. When she speaks, she sounds surprised. Hello. Your bag clinks as you set it down. Unsure if you should offer to shake her hand. You wait for her to speak, and she points to the bag. Are those offerings for our... for my mother? The voice is beautiful, though hesitant. You're still not doing much, saying much, but you nod mutely. Yes, anything. Anything for her. It's worth it to see the way her face lights up. She sits back down on the bench and gestures you to the one across from her. You shift and sit up on it. I thought no pilgrims came anymore. So many mortals have forgotten. As she speaks, you manage to regain a tiny bit of your senses, looking around at the room. It's true, though the place is well maintained, it seems you're the first non-shapeshifter to enter for a long time. Before you can voice your questions, she explains. This is a temple to my mother, Illyrius. I maintain it, and my siblings visit from time to time. The pilgrimage is hazardous, so you must be brave. You think about the stone in your pocket, which seemed to transmit your good intention to the many amorphous creatures living in the lands outside. You wonder what they would have done if you hadn't had anything to show your safe passage. Would they have defended this place? Yes, they would have. It's still brave to come to unknown places, though. Those stones don't work if you're the wrong kind of person. She chides you happily as she plays with her light braid. Her hair is longer than when she first sat up. A strange light is emanating from it, bathing the room as if it were still day. Did she just read your mind? Yes, only in this place. The spell is in the stones. We can both make use of it. I'm not hiding anything, she says, with a challenging glance. On edge, you back up just a little bit in your seat. You see her face fall as she leans toward you, reaching out a steadying hand. It's not that you mind having your mind read. Other than that, she might see all the dirty thoughts you're having about her as she sits there in her short dress, her legs crossed, sitting unconcerned on the bench. Her hands smoothing the front of her dress, however. But the only ones who can read minds are... My mother is not related to the departed gods, and I have no traffic in forbidden magics. She was young and powerful and different, and she's never left us. She remained, and she loves you as she does all creatures, powerfully, truthfully. This is only for communion between us. It is not a deliberate magic. You nod, acknowledging that, yeah, on some level you definitely are okay with it. It was just startling. Magic of mental compulsion or mind reading is typically the province of the direct descendants of the departed gods, and they were bad news. But if a goddess did remain, one who is different from the others, she could surely enact the old magics. This place was made for creatures to grow closer, the winged woman across from you explains. Many ceremonies were held here. Always we connected to each other. My sisters, mortals, the slimes, the mimics, anyone else who wanted company and kindness. I could read your mind, but in your haste you have not yet tried to read mine. Look into my eyes. Her eyes are pools of blue-white light. You're happy for any excuse to look at her smiling face. And when you look into them, you do see thoughts, feel thoughts, hear them, taste them, smell them. Your mind can't decide which sense this experience belongs to, and so your body settles for all and each of them at once, united and separate. She is thinking about the ceremonies she mentioned which were once held here, and her favorite one in particular. But perhaps because she's more familiar with the spell than you, you can't see what ceremony it was. You feel a throb somewhere between your legs, filling you with heat. No wonder. She's right there. She's gorgeous. But that wasn't your heat. It was more complex. It was something else. You point out the inequity in her having more knowledge of how a truth-based enchantment works. She could know anything about you. There are other ways to learn, and I prefer those. Try asking. Try communicating. I promise I'll do the same, if there's something I want to know, and there is. You sense she wants you to ask before she'll ask you anything. In fact, you feel a mental nudge to ask, but instead you nudge the bag of pure water cores with your foot. You said your mother takes offerings, you ask? Yes, but I see now those are for your research, so maybe you could offer time instead. Like the time it takes to ask me a question. You sigh. She's not going to give up. What is your favorite ceremony? You ask. We would come together here and mingle our forms, touching skin to skin, minds melting together, nudge toward pleasure, communicating with more than words. You nod yes. You feel your sex dripping. You think hard, yes, you want that. You want to try that. You look at her lips. lips. You lick your own. You feel your nipples pointing. You feel your thighs rubbing together. She's doing the same. She's very deliberately stripping away her dress, just a little bit, lowering it from her shoulders, showing off her tits, bouncing them on the palms of her hands. "Yes, what?" she asks, extending one hand and resting it on your inner thigh, leaning forward enough that her breasts come very close to your face. Are they bigger now? Yeah, they are. Any other thing might merely be misremembered, but there's at least one thing about her form you know you got a good look at. You knew the exact size of her tits. You decide you don't care. You want exactly what she described. You want to come together. You want to mingle. You sense it from her, her desire, her overbearing desire, which threatens to sweep you away in the wonderful joy of communion with her, her soft flesh against you. There is something like awe, something like light in there. You want to connect to her body. The place she is touching you feels so hot, and tingling waves that echo into your soaked pussy. You're dripping, your clit is pushing free from its covering, the hood pulling back entirely on its own. Your whole body is into it. Everywhere she's touching you is arousing you, hot, hot. You sense her fond memories of this ceremony, how she adored the attention, the pleasure born of connection, how it was the last time this place fit full of life to her, the last time she felt really close to the other progeny of Illyrius and to the goddess herself. You say to her that you feel she's still hiding something, and her manner changes just a tiny bit. Instead of being forward and aroused as visibly as before, she looks aside, a little shy. But then she explains, "My touch is never without risk. I did not often join in the ceremonies before, and when I did, they tended to get too wild. You might be quite exhausted when we're done. I took a snapshot of your form just now, as I experienced it when touching you. I will be able to restore you to exactly this state. No worries. I'll be able to return you to exactly how you feel now. No matter what happens to either of us in our pleasure." Then she spreads her legs, the smooth perfection of her pussy soaked and spread, a parted puffy slit mirroring your own, neatly trimmed patch of her blonde hair above it. You feel her want, her hot liquid need for you, and it is echoed in your body. And then the first of her tentacles brushes your shoulders, shockwaves of heat from there, jetting down to your clit, jetting down to your parting opening. Light in your mind sparks bright, and you melt into her touch, adoring it, adoring her. She pushes you backwards, and then she slides next to you on the long bench. Tilting her body horizontal, you lay back too against the rest at one side, pushing your pussy toward hers, the two of you rubbing, clenching your thighs, grinding. And ordinarily, this might not be enough to get you off, but from the instant you brush against her body, both of your clits are alight with pleasure and you can feel both of them. You feel what she's feeling, which is the slight heat and friction, but the wetness of your juices on her and hers on you, and her tendrils creeping down, one pushing into her pussy, you see it, a long, translucent appendage, also pressing one into you. Everywhere they touch you, they awaken your body to pleasures you hadn't felt before. Your body is as new to you as it is to her, and hers to you. Each of you feeling, the other's craving, each of you echoing in desire and delight. You want her the way she wants you, but you also adore your own body in its sudden spasming response as one of her tendrils begins rubbing your clit, hard friction against you. You want your own body, and she wants hers, seeing it through your lens. Both of you observing the other, the heat of it. You see her across from you, shining in all her glory, her wings no longer pure white, they're now darker, slick and gray, immaculate, beautiful, as though carved of some kind of mineral that is just now in its molten form. Those tendrils extend from her lower back, from her arms. They find their way around to massage your ass. But your clit is never untouched. Your pussy is being filled by something about as big as two fingers, pressing in, curving, pushing a little button just inside on the front wall, in the space behind your clit, massaging in come-hither motions. You melt into that touch. You don't have to do anything else because she's feeling pleasure from pleasuring you. You could just lay there and let her massage deep inside you. Let her fuck herself to climax, but you don't just lay there. You grind back against her. You reach down between the two of you, arching your body a little, find her clit, and rub it hard. You latch on. You're no longer just letting her scissor you. After all, she has the advantage of her tendrils. You have to do more back. You grind your ass on the couch, feeling how one of her tendrils is rubbing up between your cheeks. You let her push the tendril into your pussy deeper, and you squeeze down around it, clamping as hard as you can, seeing if the sensation gets referred back to her. It does. Her eyes are wide, watering from the corners. Her mouth is open in a silent moan. She's trying to escape the pleasure of it, but only so she can please you more. Everywhere those prehensile extensions touch, there is pleasure, but where you are grinding one finger on her clit, now reaching down with the other hand as she no longer insists on scissoring you and she just lays back, lets you mount up over her, pushing two of your fingers inside, her tendrils still work, you're still being pushed toward your own release. But as you mingle your pleasure with hers, she loses track of where exactly you are. The tendrils start rubbing mindlessly at the couch you're laying on, at the cushions around you, at her own body. She's rubbing her own breasts. You think about that, and then the rubbing gets more intense. You think about one of her tendrils slipping up to slide in her own mouth, and it does so. These bodies are no longer each your own individually, but apparently two can play that game. As you take one hand off her pussy, slide it between your legs, and rub your own clit. Hard, hot, you're bucking, you're rolling, you're not sure if you've started coming or if you ever stopped coming, or oh, your brain is full of stars and heat, full of the presence of her and the need for more. Concentrated care and affection, the desire to bond and connect with you is flowing back along those tendrils. You know her honest intentions, and neither of you could hide those from the other in this moment. You notice and adore the feeling of her, this sublime being, her skin heated and now revealed. She's so soft because she's not firmly one form, she is many. In the memories which flood over you from the touch of her tendrils, sliding inside your pussy, slipping against your lips, and you do suck, and she responds to that by twitching. She must feel erogenous pleasure from those tentacles. You lose track of your own body. You are your body, of course, your pussy wetly squeezing down around her tentacle. Your ass being massaged, your mouth sucking, your fingers still working her clit, one, and your other hand between your legs rubbing, rubbing. You lose track of your own body, but you unite yourself in pleasure with her. She slips easily in and out of you, even as she's laying back, her main body apparently too lost in all the things you're doing to her tendrils, to her mind, to your own body. Each of you in that kind of morass, where both of you is contributing to a group communal pleasure, but normally there might be a group to mediate it out. There is only the two of you, and that is too much. Playing back in your mind the feel of her sizing you up, touching you, allowing your thoughts to be shared, you click your tongue. She's just full of tricks, but chiding her is impossible, because then she begins to grind against your hand, amping her own pleasure, which amps yours in turn. Her dress is gone, you're not sure when. Perhaps she vanished it with her angelic seeming, becoming more down to earth, but also more and more beautiful. Everything about her is more honest now, especially her body. She's drooling her juices down onto the couch below. Of course, so are you, but you think her tentacles are lapping them up, and certainly you know from her desires leaking into you that her tongue would be between your legs if she could get it there. If she could taste you, she would. That is flowing over you so hot. Memories of her touching herself, this divine descendant, memories of her need as she lay alone, longing for contact, staring at the mirror, enjoying her own body, and because the emotions of that moment are carried on the tentacles fondling your ass, rubbing your pussy, the one that's trying to get at your clit, but you're rubbing your own clit because she made you start doing it pleasurably, agreeably earlier, just like you made her start fondling her own tits. Now, the tentacles sliding around your pussy, pushing inside, spreading you. The emotions of her own self-pleasuring join on. The hunger which has gone before this moment is being carried up into you. You feel the same way about her body that she did, turned on by it even more by the moment. You also feel the arousal she has at your pussy wrapped around her tentacle, at your sucking on one of them too, at the wet squeezing inside, the division between you vanishing more and more, two pussies now just becoming one powerful, manifest, joyous place. There is pleasure, a beast of pleasure, united as she raises and drops her hips, as she moves around to make her tits bounce. The two of you, so hot. She saw you staring at them and she wants you to see them. Her wings are sticking out straight, firm, as if they were erect, just like her clit is under your fingers, as if some part of the process of fucking her senseless with your fingers, with her own tendrils, with your mouth sucking on her tentacles too. All the things you're doing are going toward giving giving her too much pleasure, and some part of that is making her wings stand straight out, shivering in the air. You're making them stiff and excited, it seems. You don't have much thought about you. Even picking which limb you're commanding is such a challenge, because each of you is commanding the others as well. You think about grabbing her tits, and she grabs them with her hands, drawing on one of the memories she has of masturbation, and she just begins to pinch and fondle exactly as she did back then, lifting her tits from below and letting them drop for you to see, and so much more, yes. This is when you feel something firm and throbbing under your fingers, her clit standing more proudly free of its hood. You reach down to your own and rub it more firmly because she wants you to. Two can apparently play the game of confusing the other's body, and she must have wanted to feel your touch more. Now you intentionally climb on the impulses she's sending, letting her command your body as you command hers. Her clit stands proud of its hood, and it's hard to keep much pressure on it when she's bouncing, when she's pushing against you, when her whole body is just gyrating on that couch. It feels good. You're both experiencing two people's worth of pleasure. What must this ritual have been like when there were many people at once, you think? Maybe it was easier to handle it. I'll show you, she says. I'll invite someone, one of my friends. We'll all mingle. She's moaning still, gasping still, riding you as your pleasure nears its limit. Your clits are rubbing together now. She's perfectly aligned. Your pussies, your tendril-massaged ass, the confines of your slit are pumping and pulsing. She lets out a sigh. Soothed by the idea of mingling, of doing this ceremony more and together, you don't have time to think about that before she slows her movement against you, stops her grind. She's bouncing so vigorously, you turn your gaze up to her face. She looks shocked, even frightened a little, but the giant grin in her eyes wide. You don't know why you think that until... Oh, you feel it too. Her mouth agape, frozen, eyes wide. She's trying to make sounds come out. So are you. But you've both bitten off more than you can chew. Your pussies, mingled pleasure, climax, clits, singing, stars behind your eyes. You're going to arrive at the same time. You've both done too much to please the other. And this cresting crescendo is greater than any of the tiny climaxes you've had on the road so far. When two lovers come at the same time, it's sexy, intimate, rare, but fun. But when two people who scarcely know where one body ends and the other begins climax at the same time, well... The two of you are coming together. Your mind is leaking out of your pussy. The two of you rubbing them together. Your clit is standing up against hers, rubbing somehow in that moment directly together. And when the climax happens, you clamp on her tendril. You urge her to plunge one into herself, and she does. And both of you are coming. Coming, squeezing, filled and fulfilled. Your ass is being massaged by those tendrils as well. Her wings still standing out straight and stiff. Her head arched back. She's drooling from the corner of her mouth. Her nipples are so erect, pointed. You lean forward, collapse atop her, capture one in your mouth, suck deeply, but she flips over and lays on you, grinds against you, the two of you, moaning, mingling, contained in the cocoon of her wings and the softness of her flesh, coming, climax and stars, jetting up to your head, jetting up to your brain, the two of you, squeezing together, rubbing together, friction, soaked, sticky, desperate friction, desperate to feel each other. Desperate to be nearer. Desperate to be together. Your mouth latched onto her nipple, sucking desperately while she reaches down and pinches yours. She grinds your sexes together, her clit against yours straight on, the two of you dripping, grasping around those tendrils. Fucked, one thrusts into her at the same time the other pulls out of you, and vice versa. But the problem with that is, each of you is feeling what the other feels, so each of you is always full, never both at the same time. Each of you simultaneously wanting to be filled and enjoying being filled, wanting to be empty for a moment to breathe, and being empty, yet finding it impossible to capture your thoughts, to lock them in, hard to hold on to them. They're slippery and sticky and slick, just like the space between your legs, the space between your ears, one and the same. No dividing line, no barrier, no escape, pleasure hounding you back into your brain, coming, coming, yes, yes. She lets it leak from her mouth, a moan, a single word. She can't form many because she's lost in the formless void of pleasure, haze of pleasure, the well springing loose, the dam breaking, and the two of you shaking the surface you're laying on, shaking that couch, that bed, that pew where people once collected, once laid on soft surfaces and did one another hard. Normally this would be distributed over a larger group. Normally the whole group wouldn't necessarily be coming at once, but with only two of you, everything you feel is more concentrated, passed back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and her nature lets each of you so intensely feel the other, and then the tendril inside you begins to spurt hot, thick, coating fluid, some part of her, some wonderfully liberating manifestation of delight, as her memories, her adoration, her enjoyment, her appreciation for all you are spurts into you and you feel it, warm, euphoric, heated, deep in, causing you to clench and contort, causing you to contract and squeeze down, clamping so hard in her tendril you feel it squish a little inside your pussy, as her heated, sticky stuff surrounds the thrusting, the pulsing, the pushing, the moan of it, escapes you, lets out, fills that vaulted echoing space, each of you connected to the other, you grasping around her, the commingled thoughts of all this pleasure, all this climax, becoming something more, becoming a crystallized memory you'll never forget, and will, in fact, remember your way back to when you're getting off, when you're touching yourself. I want to touch you, she says, when you even think of touching yourself, as if she were claiming all your future climaxes for her own, grinding against you. There isn't much energy in her. You thought she would have a lot more. You thought she'd be a lot more powerful. But really, it seems like she's so unaccustomed to pleasure, so shy of her own stimulation, that you have simply overwhelmed her, and she's exhausted, panting, her chest rising and falling, her wings limp as she lays there. But she does manage to slide over and kiss your cheek, kiss up to your lips. Press her breasts against your chest, press her thighs against yours, sliding one leg between your legs so you can grind out a little and she can grind on you, each of you putting your sticky, post-climactic, overly stimulated sexes on the other, your slits parted a little, your clit standing proud. It is so, so good to be together, to be mingled like this. She lets out a final shuddering gasp, and you feel at least enough relief to know her climax is ended, though your aftershocks continue, and as they carry over to her, you wonder, for one terrible, wonderful moment, is that going to set her off again? But no. She manages, with difficulty, and with much exhaustion, to calm herself down. To calm down the pulsing of her pussy and the wet thrusting of her tendrils, which never quite stop stimulating you. The one that pulls out of your pussy leaves some clear, translucent, heated, it almost looks like lubricant like you might buy in a store, dripping from your sex. You squeeze tight, wind to keep it inside you because it's heated from her body. It's a sign of her delight, her adoration. And when she spurted from that tendril, her face did enter an extra rapturous shiver. She did smile more broadly. It must have felt really good to squirt inside you while you squeezed down on her. It must have felt amazing for the two of you to shiver, shudder, escape, come, stars behind your eyes, eyes slamming shut anyway, trying to keep it in, trying to keep it out. You feel her shiver. It's not just your aftershocks are threatened to set her off. It's thinking about sex at all. Thinking about sex with her. Thinking about your bond, your connection. You think about masturbating on your own again, and you hear her whimper. Whining, begging. She wants to be the one to set you off for all your days. You set aside the implication of that for now. And breathe a sigh of relief as your body, overheated, overworked, reddened, engorged, as everything is between your legs, manages to calm down enough for you to think, at least for a second, and to slowly pull her tendrils away from you, regretful though you are at the lack of that stimulation, and hard though it is to do when touching them sends you to visit her pleasured mind, which is overwrought and far hornier even than you. As the climax dies down and your shaking stops, she nestles against you, one leg still possessively, protectively curled over your body. A wing follows, once more covering you both like a blanket. A distant cousin of mine, a scion of one of the other young gods, calls your city home. She'll give me a place to stay that we may honor my mother with this ceremony again in that place. Again. No, not a ceremony, you say, hiding your grin from sight by turning to the side in an effort to surprise her. You're firm, and you have to be, to keep her from seeing through it to your real plan. But it almost pains you to see her face fall out of the corner of your eye. She clutches you firmly to her, denying your apparent refusal. So instead of making her wait, you instantly add, "Instead, come with me on a date," you ask her, and her expression turns around, her eyes glistening, mouth turned up in a smile. It's silly how good you feel to make her happy for even an instant, but obviously she's overjoyed as well. You tell her there's a play that you think she'll like. She buries her face against your chest. You groan in pleasure mixed with overly intense memory as her contact with you awakens your desires and makes your form uncertain once more. This is going to take some getting used to, but you're more than willing to... Oh, she's kissing you. She heard you thinking what you're thinking. It's going to be hard to think mushy things about her if she reacts this quickly. And hard to keep your hands off her if you feel hot, overwhelming waves of desire like that one every time she has the merest fantasy while in contact with you. Worth it? Well, she slides down between your legs and begins to lick, cleaning your mingled fluids with her soft tongue, her tendrils kneading your every sore muscle, and you can tell from their contact, leeching back up to her mind and catching her surface thoughts, you can tell she's massaging you so you'll be ready to go again more quickly. Ready to go again? She asks right after. You can't walk home like that, but if you let me do all the work, I'll fly you to the city later. That's okay, right? We can bond again. She asks it, and you feel how she's rubbing her thighs together in a plea for more fun, the significance she put on the word bond, the delight and desire she feels for you, and, indeed, in this world, you alone. Many others have passed through, but no one's a judge of character like her. And so, you conclude to yourself that despite the degree to which you're going to be worn out when she's done, going at least one more time would be so worth it. And another time after that, you think as she kisses her way up, up over your collarbone, her lips finding yours. And again, and again. And in the city, on the night of the play, not too long from now, something more as well.